Yes.
I'll try to turn it so folks can hear. There's nothing you've said that I disagree with, and I've got a theory, but I want to kind of boil it down to very practical issues. We're in the political season. And I...
How do you know that? Sorry, I couldn't resist. All right.
So you drive down the street and you see all these political signs, many of whom I disagree with strongly. I try to practice mindfulness when I'm driving. Right? You stay focused on your driving and not let your eyes wander all over. And then when they wander, say, oh, I can't stand that guy. I can't stand what he's doing. Why couldn't somebody run against me? But this, you know, I'm thinking, well, what, from a mindfulness point of view, can we do? And I think of this. One is be aware of what's happening at the moment. When does that happen? You say, well, you're thinking and you're judging. You're not paying attention to your driving as fully as you could. Secondly, if you really get into it, you could say, well, the next time I do a metta to send out to loving kindness, I will include this person as a reminder to myself. Beyond that, let's get into, you know, you can say in theory, you know, what you were saying about control. Well, I can't control these people who put these signs up. I can't control the politicians and the anglocentric views that they have. All I have is control of myself. However, when the red flag is showing in front of me every almost 15 seconds as I'm driving down the road, should one be trying to become oblivious to it? And I've thought about, well, maybe put my own signs on my car. But I have mine on. But that somehow doesn't seem to be in the tradition of what we're trying to do here.
Yeah.
Anyway, when something gets, I'm trying to boil this down a little bit so everybody can identify, when something really bothers you that you see on a regular basis, at which you've got absolutely minimal control.
Right.
And yet you feel very strongly about it.
Yeah.
How do you, what's the next practical steps to help?
So Dave's, let me just say, so Dave's question is, again, he says political season, lots of reminders, politicians, the immediate things, you drive down the road and you see their signs everywhere. Dave said he's doing his best. He's trying to practice mindfulness, just stay focused on the breathing and just the driving, not let himself get overwhelmed with what he could get overwhelmed with. He could even do metta, loving kindness meditation for them. You know, may they see the error of their ways and know happiness and goodness in their life and, right, return home. But he said, yet, there must be something more. How do you relate to that? Yeah, and again, you know, mindfulness as a practice is just one aspect of the Buddhist practice. You know, it's an eightfold path, and even to say that, it is a comprehensive path, and we have to understand that it's not simply about mindfulness. I mean, it's also about understanding. I mean, you know, to me, political signs are the least of it, Dave. I mean, if you really want to get yourself aroused, I mean, just look around the world and the wars and the insensitivity and the poverty and you know what I mean, and the 40,000 children dying every day for lack of medical care. When you know the inequality of, I mean, if you really want to get yourself worked up, I could certainly help you. So I mean, to, you know, political signs are like the simplest, right? You know what I'm saying? They're just the tip of the iceberg. Yeah. Yeah. So how do you deal with it? Right. And how do you deal with it in an intelligent way, a wise way? Right? But on the other hand, not from a place of insensitivity.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And also know, that we have to act. Yeah. Right? And we have to act. Especially, when there are such difficulties, such injustices in the world, such terrible things going on in the world. And, many people think some of the things going on, like global warming, et cetera, and the heating up of the planet and all this, are not just more the same, but are actually, threatening really the existence of future generations and the world as we know it. So, there are really quite significant, more than usual. In this sorry human history. The question is, where do we begin, Dave? Right. And I think we have to begin with the basic acceptance that things are the way they are because of causes and conditions. This is like, a beginning place for everything, whether it is, why is she acting the way she is? Because of causes and conditions. If I was her, right? Thich Nhat Hanh's wonderful poem, Call Me By My True Names. I don't know if people know it. It's one of his most beautiful poems. Call Me By My True Names. Somebody could bring it next week and read it. But it's a very powerful poem in many ways. But one of the things, and we know that he's a Zen master, he's a great apostle of love and compassion and nonviolent, and yet he says, when he wrote the poem during the time of the Vietnamese boat people, when many of the Vietnamese were fleeing Vietnam in these boats, and during their journey across the China Sea, South China Sea, they were, Gulf of Siam, they were attacked often by pirates, Thai pirates, who would not only rob them, but often rape the women, kill. It was very perilous. And very easy to get what? Angry at these pirates, right? Hateful, what they're doing. And in his poem, Thay says, I am the 8-year-old, the Vietnamese girl, boat person, on the boat, who was raped by the pirate. So he identifies himself with that victim. And then he says, but I am also the pirate who rapes her. And that if I had grown up in that colony of Thai pirates who lived on the coast and who always have earned their living by some form of piracy. If I had been a child born into that culture, raised by that culture, following what my father and grandfather had done, I would be the pirate. That's interesting. Your heart goes out to the victims, and yet you understand that you also could be Mitt Romney. Yes. Do you understand that, Dave? If you had grown up in his family, perhaps, with his father, with his mother, with his culture, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, been exposed to everything he'd been exposed to, you too might be espousing those views. When we understand that so much of what we think is us is really just a product of causes and conditions, and if the causes and conditions in our life had been different, we'd be different. Thich Nhat Hanh says, I am the mayfly, buzzing about, and I am the frog, that with my tongue I catch the mayfly and eat it. He says, I am both. That's profound, isn't it?
Yes. It's a stretch with Rick Scott.
I didn't want to bring that up because I knew that would be Yeah, I mean, that's the same, and it's the same way, you know, and it's the same way if you were a Republican, how you would feel about Obama. I mean, it's you know. Now, again, that doesn't mean that as citizens of a democracy where, you know, decisions have to be made that we think are for the greater benefit of society, that there are different views about how to accomplish that, right? And it doesn't mean that you don't enter that arena, but you don't enter that arena with that incredible self-righteousness, judgment, you know, right? You know, you understand that views are often conditioned by causes and, you know, by causes. And when you understand that, you realize if you want to change the world, you have to change the way people view things. And if you want to change the way people view things, then you have to be willing to what? To change the conditions under which they live. You have to be willing to dialogue with them. You have to, you know, you can't just hate them. You can't just distance yourself from them. But at the same time, you know, the world is unfolding the way it is because of what? Because of causes and conditions. You know, because of egocentricity. You know, why do fairly intelligent human beings or nations, you know, just totally exploit their natural resources, even to the point of view where, you know, it could be killing them? Why? We could say at one hand it's, you know, meeting immediate needs and not looking at the deeper issues. Don't we all do that as individuals? Short-term needs versus long-term, yeah, we all do it. Impulsivity, greed, what's in it for me? I don't really think about anybody else, right? Take what's for me, don't think about future generations. Right? I mean, many of us are very short-sighted. Right? Many of us are very narrow-minded as individuals. So when you get a bunch of those kind of individuals together running a society, you can see the choices that are made. Right? Again, it's, you know, the world is made up of human beings, right? And, you know, when you see somebody that you say, wow, they're greedy, right? You know, wow, they're greedy, you know? Being a billionaire is not enough, right? They want to be, not like me. But yet, if we were honest, we might have to say, even in our own little world, we might be greedy ourselves. Right? We just maybe act out on a much smaller scale. But that's because life hasn't given us the opportunity to act out on a greater scale. We might be the same way of the people that we're so judgmental of. So another thing is to acknowledge that these people that we look at with such distaste may not be so different than us. We also may be very intolerant of people who have different views than us. We might also impugn negativity, right, to others and think that we're always in the right, you know. And when we see somebody doing it to us, acting just like us, but with totally opposite views, we're outraged. And we can't believe it. How can they be so intolerant? How can they be so judgmental? How can they say such negative things about us? And yet we feel perfectly justified to say all those negative things about them without understanding. They're going, yeah, but I think this is really for the best. I think this is the better way to run a society. I think this will help. When you understand that, then the political dialogue and the civil dialogue becomes one of what? Mutual respect, even if it's different. There is at least a respect that the other person has a point of view, is entitled to have a point of view, and they may be coming from good motives too. I'm not the only good person in this fight. You know, and we're talking about politics here, but we could be talking about intimate relationships because the same stuff goes on, right? We think what? Who's right? Me. Who's wrong? You. Right? Who's coming from good, pure motives? Me. Who's selfish? You. Right? Well, I mean, you know, so, you know, we have to see that oftentimes when we see chiefs of states and diplomats and all these people talking, you know, and heads of state and corporations, they're just like us. It's the same nonsense. I mean, it's just being acted out at a much higher level. And the words are different. But the underlying emphasis, human emphasis, is really the same. We're all human beings. And so that is why, when we understand that, we realize that the kind of things that we're doing here, and again, hopefully the kind of things we do here are being done in many different places in many different ways. I mean, we don't have the corner on the truth, but we understand that it's when human beings themselves, as individuals, become peaceful human beings, accepting human beings, right? And generally care about the well-being of everyone, right? And yet respect different, you know, all those things, when that really is the way the individual lives, then it naturally will be carried into society. The problem is what these days? That what passes for religion is often belief systems rather than personal transformation. Really? I don't have to transform. I'm good just by what I believe. Right? I'm good because of the house of worship I go to. That makes me good and right. Right? I don't have to change. Right? Right? I don't have to become Christ-like. Right? I can be, you know, I can continue, you know, my ways because I believe, you see. So the transformation is not part of the process in so many religions these days. You know, and that is why people are so disheartened, because they see so much intolerance and violence and judgment and all these things, you know, being done in the name of religion. That's because, again, unfortunately, these things have become institutionalized over the years, and they become something to believe in, something to identify with, and not necessarily something to practice for one's own transformation. Which again, I think, is what was essentially the message of all the founders of the religion. They founded a way to live, right? Unfortunately, it's changed over the years. You know, hopefully we can do it different. But you know, I mean, Buddhism is no different. I mean, if you go to Asia, honestly, you'll see that most Asian Buddhists, you know, the Buddha has been, even though the Buddha was so negating of that type of religiosity, and would say, I am not a god, you know, what am I? I am awake. You know, that's what he would say, I am awake. You know, I'm here to help you wake up. That's my path, it's a path of awakening. You know, don't do what I say because you think I'm a god or because I tell you to, you know. You know, that's kind of the Buddhist teachings. So, but yet you find in Asia, you know, you go to Buddhist temples and there's an image of the Buddha and people are praying to the Buddha like he's a god. You know, asking him to intervene in their life. You know, help my son pass his exams so he can get into a good college. Help my daughter find a good, you know what I mean, help my son find a good wife. I mean, these are what people are praying for. I mean, it's no different than if you would go to most temples and churches. So again, that's just the way it is. But again, it doesn't mean for people who are, and I think that's what's going on in our country so much in the world. People are, you know, not necessarily rejecting the religious forms, but they're looking for a more personal, self-transformative path. Looking for something deeper, and looking for something that they can personally participate in. You know, I mean, that's why in Buddhism, people can say, you've heard me say, you can say, I want to be a Buddha. Right? In some religious traditions, if you said things like that about the religion, you could be crucified, right? Or you could be burned at the stake, right? I mean, but in Buddhism, you can say, I want to be a Buddha. I want to be a fully enlightened being. That's my goal. I want to be just like the Buddha. And people will say, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Because that is what the path is about, and that's what the Buddha taught, the path to Buddhahood. He taught it. He said, you know, don't just follow me out of blind obedience or devotion, even love. He said, don't take what I say because you love me. He said these to his disciples. Check it out for your own experience, your own intellect. Make sure it accords with your understanding. Practice it. If it really begins to change and transform you, then go deeper into it, you know, but not faith-based. Sorry. So we will actually, what I'm going to begin teaching, I finished teaching from the teachings of Thich Nhat Hanh, and when I come back in 2 weeks, we are looking at some wonderful teachings from the Buddha himself and his early disciples, which I think you'll find are very relevant. This is a kind of anthology of different teachings that I want to share with you and comment on, to when it's a big time and you're in real distress about something. Ask yourself, what am I holding on to? What am I holding on to right now? And am I willing to let go? Because you know, you will eventually let go. The only way you're going to return to any kind of calmness again is you're going to let go. You're either going to let go by what? Letting it recede and stop thinking about it, right? Or else you're going to, enter into some kind of peace, reconciliation, dialogue with, you know, and come to a place of understanding and acceptance. Why not do it right from the beginning, rather than going through all that anguish, unless you enjoy it. But I don't really think people enjoy anguish. Even though I know there are psychological systems that say people do, I don't believe it. I don't think anybody likes to suffer. We just don't know better. So anyhow, so I suggest that this week really pay attention to when you are in any kind of distress or anguish, from the littlest to the biggest, and ask yourself, what am I holding on to now? And am I willing to let it go? Why do I want to let it go? So I can be at peace, and so my heart can open again. Okay, thank you.